Welcome back. This is Microsoft Virtual Academy. This is sunny Seattle.
Sunny, sunny, sunny. Liquid sunshine for sure.
No doubt. You are watching Developing Universal Apps with C# and XAML. We have already talked about sharing code strategies and what's supported for the developer inside our tooling. But now we're stepping back, and in this module, we're going to be talking about the design considerations, right? What the designer is going to think about when you're building your app. So, you know, the reality is there's a lot of one developer shop, right?
Yep.
One guy, he's doing everything. He's the tester, he's the designer, he's the developer. No problem, right? If that's true, then this is for you. Maybe this is also for your designer to consider as well. And so there are a lot of things that you put in place, not just because it's a universal app, but partly also because this is a modern app, and there's a lot of things to consider. We'll kind of run through all the big ones, and no kidding, there's a lot to think about.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is a key statement that needs to be made, which is ultimately the user experience is what defines your app to your customer. That it doesn't matter how cool the code is, how scalable you've made the back end, the detail in your data model, and all the validations, and so on and so forth. If somebody finds it difficult to use your app, unless they're forced to use the app, which is how many enterprise applications got away with the way that they look and the way they behave, is, you know, you've got to use it.
That battleship look.
Yep. But if you're in the store and somebody is choosing between your app and another one, the user experience of your app is what.
How many times have you opened up an app and you're like, I could build this? There's it's so simplistic. Yet it's a successful app, right?
Yep.
And they have really taken care of the polish. And you as a developer, you're pulling it apart. You're like, oh, okay, they need to call a service for this and this and this. You're like, there's nothing to it. And it just goes to show, right? It's not the development behind the scenes. The technology is great, but the user cares about their experience. Perfect. All right, so in this module, let's cover some basic pieces. We're gonna cover the platform capabilities. And we'll talk about what that means and the specific design language inside these platforms. And then we'll talk about the device variability, and this is really where you got to keep your mind focused because there's a lot going on.
You've got a lot of things to think about from the outset. You need to factor that in from the outset.
Yep, and then some just general design considerations that we'll do here at the end.
Yep.
All right, so let's start with platform capabilities. Then, if you are writing for Windows, you are writing for a Windows Phone. The reality is the guidance around those UIs is very, very consistent.
Yes.
It's a, I think you like to say it's a common vocabulary.
Yes. And I think that's really, really key. One of the things that I think Microsoft did very well in the modern language was turn around and say, you know, in the initial launch, it was the term sort of authentically digital, which is trying to get away from the skeuomorphic aspects of the iOS at the time, which, you know, had a lot of green felt. It had a lot of wood surrounds on this high-tech device you were holding in your hand. It was trying to make it seem like a familiar household object. And I think everybody's agreed that cluttering up your screen with a lot of distracting content that isn't specific to what your application is trying to do really deviated from the perspective. And so the modern design language was all about clarity, emphasis on content, and so on. And
that's completely shared.
Yes.
That's completely shared. It's not, you don't go to Phone and they're like, now we want Chrome and we don't want fast and fluid. I mean, nothing changes. That's a universal language. Well, that's the wrong word to use. I don't want to overdo this word.
Yeah, we can't overload universal.
It is a consistent language between all of the platforms in the Microsoft ecosystem.
Yeah, consistent visual paradigms are shared.
Yeah, that's right. And I think that's worth saying. You might be thinking to yourself, man, dealing with Chrome, dealing with design, authentically digital, and all these other design concepts like Windows One, I wish Darren and Jerry would talk about this in greater detail, and conveniently, we have. Yes, that's right. Don't forget, there's another MVA course called
I think it was the Essentials.
Essentials of Building Windows Store Apps with XAML and C# or something like that. And we'll have, obviously, there's links to it. And we talked about it a little bit at the beginning of the first module.
There's many, many slides in there.
And it goes on in great detail if you want to get your head wrapped around it. Here we just want to point out there is a modern design language. Mm-hmm. It is the Microsoft style, and it crosses all the different platforms. Windows and Windows Phone are going to be the same. That being said,
you can deviate from that, should you so wish.
That's right.
The advantage of sticking with the established common vocabulary that's defined both in the platform and across apps and so on and so forth is it lowers the learning curve for your users when they pick up the app. They automatically know how to navigate, where they're going to find the app bar buttons, and so on and so forth. Yeah, yeah. They know how that integrates. And so you don't have to do a lot of click here, click there.
There's value in being similar to other apps.
Yes, but it doesn't mean slavishly adhering to a monochromatic template that's just text.
These are guidelines, not commandments.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Also, so let's get past that. So we have the modern experience that's universal across all the devices, but there really are differences as mm-hmm. well. You want to make sure that you optimize the user experience for the device that they're on.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and you really do, right?
I mean,
you don't want to make it so all the scrolling experience, all the size and button and interactions that you would put in a large device like this that would be really cool.
Yep.
On a tiny little phone. Now, yeah. You've really screwed the user.
If you're trying to put all of that content and squish it down to a device that's already smaller, it's going to be uncomfortable. You're either going to have to be holding it really close to your face, or you're going to have to do excessive scrolling and navigation within the app to see it. So think about, how can I refactor the presentation of this same content to make it appropriate for the device that's being used?
Yeah, so it's not just the user workflow might change, right? Where it's a different set of steps because you're on a smaller device. It also means the layout and user experience might change. We don't have room for three buttons, we're only putting two or something like that. But it also means that you'll target what you're actually doing as far as the applicability of it. So when I'm on the phone, I'm not actually going to be doing the exact same thing I'm doing here. Maybe here I'm projecting something and I rely, let's say, on a really high-end device to mm-hmm. accomplish the rendering or whatever it is I need to do. I don't burn through my phone by having it do the exact same thing. I think about the device and what goes where. So it's not just, this is both design and feature design,
yeah.
But there's also another reality.
Yeah.
There is this non-convergence.
I mean, you may well be, when you're sitting in the desktop environment, you might be fully prepared to enter War and Peace via your keyboard. You're probably not going to do the same thing when you're holding a phone.
Right. I am not prepared to enter War and Peace, even now, to be honest.
Well, good.
Unless it's pre-recorded and I'm, you know.
Exactly. You've now just crashed your desktop.
Yeah. but there are platform-specific capabilities you also have to think of that just drive you to make them slightly different. For example, in Windows, I can print. Mm-hmm. And there's really not a good print solution yet on the phone, right? So there are things like that. Maybe you're going to use the search box in Windows or the back button, or we showed earlier the status bar and you interact with that. Those sorts of things really are platform specific, and your designs might still leverage them, right? Mm-hmm. So you would have non-identical designs, partly because of just that, the things that are missing.
I mean, if we step back from this and just think about this from a solution perspective, if you need to search in Windows, then you know there is a ready-made infrastructure there. If you need to search in phone, or I should say, if you need to search in your app,
yes,
you need to implement it on both platforms. You have an out-of-the-box kind of contract that you implement on the Windows side. On the phone, you're probably just going to create a search button and build your own custom experience there.
Yeah.
So just because they're not identical in terms of how they look doesn't mean that they don't have to implement features and vice versa. They don't have to implement features just because it's on somewhere else.
Yeah. So we're kind of stepping through the things that make your application different, right? So the first thing is because the platforms are actually different and you use them differently. The next thing might be the hardware drives it because of the type of interface that you have for typing, or maybe actually the processor is a little bit slower on the phone so you have it do different operations. Then when there's actual platform differences, but there's other things that might drive your design as well. And so let's consider now the important topic of accessibility.
Yes.
And the reason I think this is important is because I don't know if people realize this, the size of the audience that they slice out of the opportunity for their app, right? Mm-hmm. They all of a sudden, they are no longer accessible, right, to an entire demographic that loves to use technology. And so taking the time to address these issues really does matter. The other thing that's important is, you know, if this is a line of business app, there are actually going to be some, probably some ADA regulations. There certainly are changes coming in 2015 and 2016 that are going to mandate some of these changes as well. So it's just something that we as developers get to learn about and kind of understand first. So let's kind of step through it. Around accessibility, now remember, if you're handicapped in any way or disabled in any way, it doesn't mean 100%, right?
Yeah.
So I have trouble seeing the screen, and so but it doesn't mean I can't see the screen.
Yes.
Right. So that's kind of where it goes. I have trouble. I have tactile problems of really hitting buttons, but it doesn't mean I can't interact at all. And so we start making, I can use a keyboard really, really well, but I can't use the screen very well because of whatever, right? And, the application reads to me, but maybe I struggle to hear it. And so all these different things that we get to kind of consider. All right, so accessibility, the first one is around UI automation. So we have UI automation testing already as part of store apps. So you can go in and almost like a unit test, go make sure all the buttons do what you expect them to do, and you can program that as well. But then we also have assistive technologies. And so there are also assistive technologies that can be added to these, added to your Windows device. But just if you think about it, one of the things that can really mess up your app quickly is, what if the user must have an on-screen keyboard all the time? Well, first you should think, what if they just need an on-screen keyboard some of the time? That's very realistic. I'm using a tablet that doesn't have a keyboard. And so now the keyboard comes up. Am I still able to do the data entry that I need to do, because now things have really shifted? And are you listening for that? Are you able to rearrange so that I can still enter the data like that? Now what if I have to have that up all the time? There's really no good way for me to interact with it otherwise, right? That's a realistic scenario. Another one might be around voice recognition and the fact that it's not even voice recognition that we're talking about, it's other modes of input. I don't necessarily tap the screen. So if I'm only handling tap events and I'm not handling all the other possible aggregated events, then there's a possibility that I've got a type of user that can no longer interact with my my device. If I have, and I think there's an excellent build talk on this, by the way, that shows a tic-tac-toe game. If my tic-tac-toe game works perfectly and all I have to do is tap where it needs to go, that's great. But what if I have to navigate with a keyboard? Have you added keyboard navigation and all the other modalities that you sort of need? And perhaps the hardest one for developers and designers as well, because you really have to test for it to get it right, is the idea of a screen reader. So if I'm visually impaired and it's difficult for me to see the screen, that's okay. I have Narrator and other tools like that that will move from object to object and help me understand what I'm looking at by reading to me what it is. The problem is there's a lot of UI automation properties inside XAML controls that take care of this for me and make it really easy for the reader to work, but developers tend to not put those in, or sometimes developers tend to remove them even, you know, if they're there by default, because they don't understand what it's for. They don't turn on Narrator, they don't turn on a screen reader and see how that's actually used. It's almost an entirely other language, to be honest, that you have to kind of understand and kind of prep through. And there's a reality that the native controls that are given to you by Microsoft in your toolbox have all of this built in, right? All of the stuff that you need for accessibility is there inside those controls and that tooling. And it's just a matter of you to implement it, right? I can easily add a hub control and never add an automation piece to it. It still sort of kind of works, but it's not a fluid and beautiful experience for somebody who might be impaired visually or impaired some other way.
It's actually quite burdensome, isn't it, for Microsoft to have to produce all of these controls with all of these various elements in there. And a lot of the third-party controls that you might say pull down from Coplex or something along those lines will not have some of those capabilities built in because there's a lot of effort, there's a lot of testing, all the different language variations and so on and so forth of it. So it's actually interesting if you need to build accessible apps, you really do need to focus on the core tool set that's provided by Microsoft.
You're right. Earlier, we showed how you could use the accent color for phone. And the accent color is handy, but you know, if I have a visual impairment or something like that, one of the things I might do is I'll go in and set high contrast. Remember how the generic XAML gets injected into my app? Well, now the generic XAML gets replaced by a high contrast definition, and that gets injected into my app. And so I need to look and plan for what it looks like. So on this slide here, this is the high contrast of the start screen, that little snippet where it's the camera and stuff. Looks totally different, right? I mean, inside the design languages, let's not use borders, let's just color things in. All gone, right? Because we're trying to make things really high contrast. Can you imagine how many of the apps out there, they are injected with high contrast? The developer never thought about that before. Now, me as a user needing that, I look at it, I can't even see anything. Everything's white now. Everything's black now or whatever, and it's totally not usable. It's just something that we need to think about. Also, when you start customizing the way your app looks, there's a reason it's good to consider the theme resources instead of custom resources. Here's what I mean. If you're going to pick how large the font size is, that's totally all right. But what if instead of picking how large the font size is, you use a theme font size instead? The reason that is me as trying to make it so I can use your app, I go into my phone and I change the font size globally, right? Because you can go in and say, and please increase the font size because I need to keep the phone this close in order to even see it. And it's really difficult with the tiny font that this developer has chosen for their application. Problem solved. I can go to the system level, change all the fonts to be large, unless the developer has hard-coded those sizes. So there's a reason we can use these theme resources to define all the aspects of your app as well. So understanding those theme resources, how they're default, the definition of those by default, and then looking and start, you know, making some changes inside your app so you can feel, oh, okay, if they make the font really large, they can no longer read anything. So now I need to make it so it wraps more properly and things like that as well. So there's a lot of little pieces like that. Another example might be media captioning. You got video, it's worth going the extra step so that video also has captioning. Not everybody can hear great. Some people can't hear at all. They still want to use your application, and you don't want to make it so that that's no longer an option for them as well. Because after all, we're out here to make applications that succeed and reach large audiences. And if they're monetized, we want to make as much as possible. If it's for a company, we want to make it as useful as well as compliant as possible. Again, these ADA regulations are coming down the pipe anyway. Coming down the pike. It's pike, like turnpike. Mm-hmm. Coming down the pike anyway. And the last thing to consider really about accessibility is in our attempt to make our designs unique, to make them intuitive, to make them special, and really bring out a business or some sort of value to the user, we customize these controls. And as soon as we start customizing controls, well, let me back up. And that's great, mm-hmm. right? Customizing controls is fantastic. But one of the options for customization is retemplating your control. That means taking the entire base of XAML and writing your own for the same control, but still using the underlying functionality. Huge and powerful part of XAML. The reality is, though, as soon as you start doing that, you erase immediately all of the accessibility aspects and functionality that has been built into that control for you by the XAML team. So now you have your own, and you better know what you're doing, because what you've probably done is unwired accessibility, and now you've got a lot of work in front of you to bring that accessibility back. Absolutely does not mean you can't do it. You absolutely can, but there's a lot to think about all of a sudden. So if you're trying to create a UI and you think to yourself, one of the things I'd like to do is to customize it in such a way that no one has ever seen it before, just know that that probably introduces an extra layer of effort if you want to make your application accessible as well. Make sense to you?
Well said.
Got it.
Well said. Okay, let's talk about device variability now.
Okay.
So what do we mean by device variability? Well, the reality is built into the platform is a whole number of capabilities that allow a user to choose how your app is presented. Mm-hmm. Some of that is just how they hold the device and the device detecting orientation changes. Others, especially now in Windows 8.1, with the ability to dock more than one app within the Windows store experience on the tablet.
Side by
side. You know, you can do the side by side. You've actually got almost infinitely variable dimensions that you can use, rather than the original 320 pixels snap to the side.
Yeah, that's right.
So you have to deal with a lot more options when you're actually building these things. Now, the great thing is XAML is designed with a very, very flexible layout system that can be rendered up and determined at runtime in terms of how it should be presented, whether it be proportional sizing and flows and so on and so forth. But that said, you still need to think how you want to present those things.
Yeah, you're right. And this graphic is really excellent because it shows that when I, as a designer, come in and start laying out the application, I can't just go just the golden path, right, and say, ah, here's what it looks like on tablet. Because if you look at these side by side and kind of count them out, there are almost six variants of the application. And we'll see in a few more slides, there's even more than that if you really want to make this really applicable to every device that's possible. And so look, I mean, we have the landscape version of tablet, we have the landscape version of phone, the portrait version of phone, which is probably the default, and then the portrait version of tablet, then we have the snap, or the, we don't say snapped anymore, but it's the narrow of tablet, which is very close to phone, might actually reuse some of those templates. And then we also have the kind of half or shared size, or it used to be called the field view of tablet as well. Well, I mean, that's six to account for.
I think the key thing there was you mentioned default in terms of the presentation for the phone and how the default for the tablet is a landscape orientation. And so, you know, those are some fundamental design decisions that are being made right at the outset about how you're going to take that content and present it.
Yeah. All the controls that we give to, all the controls the XAML team gives to XAML developers.
Because we wrote them all.
I am the pure author. They all handle these scenarios already. Now, things will need to be implemented, but it doesn't mean that they aren't already there and you're like, oh, I've got to build all this from scratch. No, that's not the way it works at all. These scenarios were already thought through for you, but they don't implement themselves. That's the idea. And I'll show in just a second, if it's all right with you, to go through kind of the XAML tooling to be able to see this so you can see how to test it.
Sure, sounds good. Let's have a look at the device resolutions and so on and so forth first. So the other aspect of this is the fact that, yes, you might have a tablet, but there are many different form factors associated with the tablet. You might have a phone, and there are many different form factors associated with the phone. So we get an awful lot of variability there, because not only in terms of resolution, but in terms of dots per inch. You know, and fortunately, there is an abstraction that sits above a lot of that specificity about devices that does allow your applications to respond to orientation changes, to evaluate what the dimensions are, and to evaluate, okay, what's my vertical versus horizontal dimensions, and work out kind of how data should be presented. But you still need to think about those things, and you still need to implement something if you actually want it to deal with those scenarios intelligently.
And it's just, the reality is, I mean, if you think about this picture of scaling all from all the way down to the tiniest little, you know, 4-inch device, all the way up, and 40 isn't big enough, right? We've got the 80-inch PPI devices now, and they run the same modern apps as everything else. And just imagine all of the changes that you would have. What you don't want, I think what you don't want, is, you know, you write an app for a phone, and when you put it on a gigantic monitor,
it looks like one huge phone.
Stretches it. Right?
You know, you've got 3-foot touch points.
Right. Lazy developer. Lazy.
Lazy.
We have a couple suggestions here over to the side, and it one of them is really important. It's that the emulator is insufficient for asset verification.
Yeah. By virtue of the fact the emulator is running on whatever device you're actually using to build, it's not presenting a true aspect of how something's going to be displayed.
Yeah.
You know, it's being compromised. You know, it's been, if you're trying to show on a 23-inch monitor a 80-foot display, it's just not going to be accurate.
Yeah, if what you're doing is saying, okay, I want to use the tooling to see this really high resolution, is my image blurry when I go to real? Well, unless your monitor changes to really high resolution, you're not really seeing what is seen there. So I think that's important. Another thing is around assets, the idea of scaling. Windows will automatically attempt to scale all of your assets for you, basically taking your image and stretching it or shrinking it to fit the appropriate size that you specify. So if you say it needs to be 2 inches wide, it's going to be 2 inches wide if it's on a large device or it's on a tiny phone. But if you say stretch, suddenly it really does stretch. And as you go from device to device with different resolutions, it looks inside the folder where you keep all of your images to see if you have one specifically designed for different scales, and it tries to give the one that's right. If it doesn't find it, it just stretches it or crushes it.
We covered this in a lot more detail in one of our previous jumpstarts, talking about all the assets and so on and so forth.
That would be the advanced one, I think.
You think so? Okay.
You have to watch them both to know for sure.
Exactly. Exactly. One thing that developers do often complain about is if you're actually going to produce assets for all the various scale factors, for all of the things that you need for in-store publication, for tiles, and so on and so forth, there are a lot of versions of an image you need to create.
Yeah, that's right. And so what you're basically saying is that, you know, if it scales to 120%, 140%, or wherever it goes, you need to create those or there's nothing it can use. But also what's important is that scaling, it is what it is. Mm-hmm. That scaling is different on Windows than it is on Windows Phone.
Yes.
So even though you might be tempted to bring all of your assets down into your shared project, you might actually find that you push those back up into the heads because the different scaling factors that you use are going to be different on each platform. Doesn't mean you won't share any of your assets. Sometimes, you know, a triangle is a triangle. But, you know, when you really have something and you want it to be beautiful and you're taking the time to scale it, the scaling will be different on each of the platforms.
Yeah. I know a bunch of designers who use Adobe Photoshop and so on and so forth. They
heard of the product.
Set up a bunch of actions that will automatically create different versions of a file and apply the scaling and apply the naming conventions. So that actually simplifies a lot of the tasks. So you might want to do some searches to find that as well.
Yeah. A lot of designers have those techniques because it just saves a lot of time.
Yeah.
It is a reality, though, that, you know, as things get smaller, rendering them smaller isn't always the best solution.
No, sometimes you may want to simplify the design and so on, so you might not really be able to just resize it down to 50 by 50 and have the same sort of informational fidelity that's available in that image.
Right. Let me show off some of the tooling. Is that all right?
Sounds like a good plan.
Show what we can actually do. I've got Visual Studio here. I'm going to use the same project. Is that all right?
Let's switch to Jerry's screen.
And anyway, so that my demo's over now, Barry. Thanks.
You got it.
I'll do it again. all right, so let me open up. And really, you know, if I'm a designer, I'm probably going to go into Blend. There's just no kidding around it. The tooling inside Blend is geared towards designers. It works best when you're dealing with design concepts and animations and things like that. So here I've got my application. And Darren, I'm really curious. You know what? I'm not going to use this same project. Let me just start a new one, and I'm going to use one of the templates that you and I never use, the hub template.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
We don't not use it because it's bad. We actually generally start from the idea of a fresh perspective on the user experience. So the hub is very formulaic, shows you a couple of ways of nesting and navigating within content and so on and so forth. It's just not something that we particularly follow when we're building custom apps.
Yeah. I don't use it because I don't like it at all. Mm-hmm. I think it implements some design patterns and some coding practices that I would absolutely never use myself and never recommend a developer ever use. So that was very kind of you to say it wasn't bad, because I'm sure the author of those templates are great people. They really are nice. I would play softball with them without hesitation. That makes sense. All right. So here I've
well,
opened
you've
up
lost the room, if nothing else.
And they just hang up. Right? I get a sucker punch when I'm walking down the hall. All right. So here's the Hub app's great, actually, because it does give me some quick content, some quick layout, and it's set up properly. And if you look at how they've done accessibility, by the way, kind of hearkening back, it's done correctly. It's really nice. And so if you're like, man, I wish I could find anything that's done accessibility.
I mean, that's a difference between a reference and a proof of concept.
That's right. Yeah, the proof of concept that you and I have written for this project, for this MVA, versus this is a reference, a type of reference app. Mm-hmm. It does a great job with accessibility. All right, so let me show you something. So here I am inside of Blend, and I could go to the Device tab, and I can say, all right, I'm looking at this right now as a tablet, and I can switch quickly to change its orientation so I can see what it does whenever I'm in Portrait. Mm-hmm. and which is, of course, a common scenario. And so then I can start to decide, okay, wait a minute, I just switched the portrait and it's one giant gray screen. That user experience is not what I want to deliver. What do I want to deliver? And maybe now I go back to Photoshop and I start building out, okay, I have got to mock this shape, and now what do I want to happen? And then I can come in with this tooling and validate that I'm actually doing it. I can also snap it as well. And so I say snap, and it's just, you know, it was embedded early. What I mean, of course, is, what do I mean?
You mean resize? Push it to one size and make it thinner.
That is exactly what I mean. All right, great. So I'll show the narrow, wait a minute. I got to show the narrow view. How do I switch it over so it's the narrow one?
No, that's his.
I can grab this and do it as well. You can always grab the little hand thing. Yeah. And so when I do grab it, you'll notice that it stops at 500. That's because I haven't enabled any smaller than 500. A brand new app right out of the gate goes to 500. Here's the drop down right here so I can change it quickly. And I can change it so it'll go to 320. So now it's 320. And I can monkey with it to make it explicit wherever it is that I want it to be. So that part's nice. And I can start to say, oh, okay. So if I use the very narrow view of it, my app is totally unusable. Absolutely unusable. Maybe I need to start using some of the templates or something like that that I use in Phone, which is also a very similar factor here. So that's one option. I can see both the resizing of the application and kind of when that occurs, and I can also see the orientation of my app as well. So I'm going to get this back to be full screen so I can switch around orientation. And then I've got this nice drop down that allows me to see a couple other things and probably really important ones. So let me drop down to a 27-inch screen, and you can see that now if you use a 27-inch screen on my application here, one of the downsides is there's this gigantic empty space. And this may just be the way it is, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not saying that's wrong. What I'm really saying is you've got to go back as a designer or take it back to your designer and say, hey, take a look at 27 inches or a really large. This is what happens. Should we do something else? Should we introduce a new visual element? Should we allow the content to go even longer than it is mm-hmm. or something like that? What that really means, though, is you're going to have a lot of sniffing tools, right, that say, okay, before I present all of the elements that go in my grid, I'm going to first ask, just how big is this monitor that I'm on? And so maybe I present even more like that. Maybe you have visual states defined. Of course, you do this up here. I would define different visual states depending on the shape of the application and how it's presented. And I swap between that so that it does or it doesn't show more columns. Right? There's a lot of ways you can make it more. You could just take the control right out of the gate. Right? Mm-hmm. There's no getting around that. You can, and a lot of developers already do. But if you really want to create a beautiful experience, one of the things you get to account for is the size of the device and how it kind of flows. The other one, and it kind of shows it here as well, is around resolution. Now remember, checking for the DPI on one device isn't enough to really know if it looks good. But what it does do, it tells you whether or not you have properly set the size of all of your assets. So I have an image and I change the resolution here to whatever, and all of a sudden it's half the screen, you know? Well, that's obviously you need to go in and set its explicit width or its explicit height and allow all the rest of the scaling to be done for you. So you might think, well, why would I check DPI? Because that really does matter. Why would I check the size? Because there's a million device types out there and there's only more coming. Yeah. And some of them are big, some of them are small, and you don't want to exclude any of your users. And I think what you'd find is there's a pattern, right? Yeah, let me handle if it gets bigger. Let's just go with that. Let me handle if it gets smaller. Let's just go with that.
And to the point you were talking about earlier in terms of universal and convergence, you know, the future is obviously closer convergence between the phone and the tablet and the desktop and so on and so forth in terms of underlying capabilities. So moving towards more of a feature detection rather than a platform detection is the way to go. You know, it's the problem that's already been encountered and addressed in HTML and CSS, mm-hmm. You know, using media queries and so on and so forth. And that's really where we're going with these universal applications.
That's right. I mean, even a XAML developer needs to think responsive design. And what are you going to do when things change? And don't forget, when things change, just because your app was loaded in a narrow view doesn't mean it's not going to be expanded. And now when they expand it, they're going to want a different experience.
Yeah. So somebody's going to start your application in Portrait and roll it into Landscape.
Here's a little preview. Tomorrow, We're going to talk about some of the pieces inside Solarizer and how we dealt with orientation change and things like that, and kind of some reusable pieces that developer you can take and start using it right away. There is a question, this is interesting. What about vector graphics? When will Windows scale vector graphics? Well, vector graphics.
Well, if you're using a path, if by saying vector graphics you're using the XAML path objects and so on, absolutely. You know, those transforms will apply to the paths. And the great thing about using paths is you'll get no pixelization as it gets zoomed in and out because it's being rendered to full fidelity each time.
So
yes, if you're talking about other vector graphic technologies, then you need to convert over to the path, because if you're building something in Illustrator and you don't do the translation from Illustrator to XAML, if you're taking basically a screenshot of that, mm-hmm. then you're going to get the pixelization as you scale up and down.
Yeah. If you use something that's web technology, I suppose you could embed a web view and mm-hmm. get the same effect as well. And of course, yep. that'll render very beautifully mm-hmm. as well. A great question, actually. All right, I think that's all I wanted to show you, except for this one quick change. Right here inside the app section where I changed minimum width, I also can change the theme. And when I change the theme, right, so I can see what it looks like when they've changed it to light, when they changed it to dark, I might actually hard code that, to be honest. I'm like, I'm always going to have a dark theme. That's not wrong. I mean, that's a common thing to mm-hmm. see now. It used to be in the early days of Windows Phone, we would say, switch between the both so you can see which one it is. Now we can fix it so it's not changed. What we can't fix is high contrast. And so if you want to see what your application looks like in high contrast, you can just select high contrast right here to the default, and this is what it's going to look like. I dare a lot of developers to open up their project, turn on high contrast, and see if they can see anything.
Yeah.
Even the back button, you can see a lot of things have really changed. And just imagine if you struggled to really be able to see details on the screen, everything just got a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, so this is the tooling. One other neat thing is I can go up to the top bar and kind of drag down. Let me see, I've got to add them first. Show guides. I've already got it. Oh, beautiful. There it is. Sorry, I went to the corner, but I need to go to the ruler. And I can pull down, and I can drag the guides wherever I need to. So as from a design perspective, I can really make sure that my application is laid out exactly the way I want. You know, like here, I can set it explicitly. I want this to be always 40 pixels, and then over this one, I need it always to be 100 pixels down. Now, as I monkey with my application, move things around, I can still line everything up exactly the way I want to. Just another little piece of candy for designers. And if your designer is technical and they can open up Blend, they can actually set up all these guides, save them out, and then hand them off to developers so they can use that to make sure their application is laying out as expected.
Yeah, it's a great support for those scenarios where you need to deliver on pixel perfection in terms of matching designs.
Pixel perfect is a big deal, and when you're trying to decide if your XAML should be shared or separated, pixel perfect design really often, let's say it that way, separates your design.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, but that's what I wanted to show.
Okay, so if we flip back to the slides on my deck. Sure, we can. There we are. So the other aspect of designing for all these different devices is actually making a choice about content.
Mm-hmm.
So if we look at the left-hand side, what we're trying to tell here is how, based upon the capabilities of the device, the DPI, the scaling, and so on and so forth, we're progressively showing more content. So yes, we're scaling up so it's actually maintained about the same physical dimensions between the devices,
yep.
but you can see the wider screen of the desktop actually introduces a new column of text.
The reason I bought a larger monitor is so I can see more.
Yeah,
not
you don't
so
want
I
to see
can
bigger.
Have it all bigger, right?
Yeah.
The fixed is a different type of layout. This uses the view box inside XAML. And this example is like a game, but you could think of checkers or something like that
yeah.
as well.
I mean, we're not going to suddenly add a bunch more rows and columns to our checkerboard because we have more screen real estate. We're just going to make the board bigger.
Right. And so then let's go to the next where we talk about scale. And so here is what Microsoft, oh, I'm sorry, what Windows, what the framework does for you, right? It automatically makes things a lot nicer. And so now I have a much, much finer device. Let's say I'm using a Surface 3 like yours, right? Mm-hmm. Really, really high resolution. I look at the text is really beautiful. I look at the images next to it. The developer didn't take the time to provide really nice assets. Clear text, crummy image, right?
Yep.
I mean, that sort of thing happens.
Words to live by.
Clear versus crummy. That's right. All right. Now let's step back and think now just about general design considerations and kind of an approach that you as a designer will take, or you with your designer will take. And I think the first, and this goes to your magical phrase, mm-hmm. is the idea of creating a common design vocabulary. Right?
Yeah.
And so here you can see these are the two initial approaches. Now, we've already talked about scale and size, and we know there's going to be more than just two. It's very naive to think you're only going to create two possible versions.
But you have to have a starting point.
But you have to have a starting point. And what this really does is it gets you down the path of, all right, and here's my two initial views into my app. What is common between them, right?
Yeah,
what do they
together?
Share?
Yeah, I mean, and the easy choices are a color scheme.
Color scheme, right? You can see they both have kind of this orange, kind of burnt color. And so now we start putting together a dictionary of brushes that I can share across the different platforms.
Yeah, and so, you know, we've got those common colors, you'll have your common highlights, and so on and so forth. Bearing in mind all the things that we've talked about beforehand about accessibility and how some of those things will be overridden.
Yeah.
Should we choose a high contrast? So it's interesting. It does add a lot of complexity to deal with accessibility, which is, I think, why many applications do a very poor job of actually doing that.
This concept of design generics is really helpful for you, too, because not only does it create a familiarity as they go from device to device, it also creates a usability, simplicity as they go from device to device as well. It also makes things easier for you because you know what you're going to do as you go. And you're like, all right, now I'm in the phone. What do I do first? I know, of course, at first I start using all the correct fonts and things you decided. But don't forget, you still have to tailor to the... Sometimes burnt orange is not the right color, right? For whatever reason, or maybe the font size or choice or whatever it is not the right one for the platform that you're putting it on. So you make these variations. So first, create these generics, but then recognize where they may need to vary slightly. But the idea of just having these generic dictionaries that are shared between them saves a lot of time fast.
Absolutely. You know, and reasons why you'd be choosing colors is if you're building an application for an established brand, you want to echo that brand, you know, so and bring that into the device. That brand may have already established a typography that they use. So again, you want to make sure you're leveraging that same typography so there isn't a jar and a friction between perhaps the web experience for that application and the experience within your mobile application. The same with imagery. That designers spend a lot of time thinking about how they want somebody to feel when they use your application.
Yeah, they do.
And colors leads into that. Serif or sans serif fonts and so on and so forth, font families, all lead into that initial feeling, that sort of emotive response when you actually start looking at an application. Same with the imagery. Do you want action shots of sports individuals on the app, or do you want the studio's kind of office worker? All of these things lend into that style for your application, and that should be echoed through every aspect of your application, which is why doing this design and establishing this vocabulary at the outset is very, very important.
Yep. Okay, I think there's a couple rules of thought we can go through. So it's so first we can tailor, we know that, but we can also just recognize that it's okay if each version doesn't look the same, right? That mm-hmm. kind of variation isn't a loss. That means you're actually catering to the experience on each of the devices as well. And the same thing with features, but we talked about that. Sometimes you do less on the phone, sometimes you do more on the phone. It just kind of depends. And that's all right too. You still have, that doesn't mean you're not being consistent, right?
And to be honest, this is a facility that's the Universal Apps brings to us.
Yeah.
Because one purchase and you get it on both platforms. So you can transition between, say you're out traveling around and you're using your mobile phone for initial capture of some information. You're going to quickly jot down some summary information. You store it, it gets pushed up to cloud storage or whatever it's going to get pushed.
Then you come to Azure.
Then you come to your desktop solution. and you bring up the same universal app that's now running on your Windows platform.
Yeah.
It's the same app, the same login credentials, the same cloud storage, and so
that's
on
right.
and so forth. You can then continue the experience and perhaps flesh out. You know, you jotted down some notes, now you're going to write War and Peace because you've got a keyboard, you're in a much
right.
better environment for capturing that information. So think about those things as well as just how it looks and how much you can squish into a screen.
That is the exact workflow of mobile OneNote for me.
Yeah.
I use it for quick little notes and then I go and flesh it out. All right, let's look at actual things that we can share and make this as practical as possible. So imagine the three projects. So we have the Windows, the phone project, and the shared project. What might go in each of them? And so let's think first just around the assets. We were talking earlier around scaling and how you're probably going to pull those scaled images up into the individual heads because Windows and phone scales images slightly differently, and you're going to want to tailor those to be as perfect as possible. Does it mean you have to do it that way? Of course it doesn't. But if you're really going to town and trying to make this as great an experience as possible, you probably will. And there may be some simple images that you really do keep over in shared as also. Then thinking about the dictionaries, like what can I save as far as styling? Well, in Windows and phone, you probably do have unique templates to be real. I mean, you may not, but you might, where you things are a little bit bigger in Windows, a little bit larger scale. Maybe on phone, everything's quite narrow. Maybe it's not quite as tall, and you do things differently. You don't have small buttons nested inside items or whatever. So you would probably not share your templates. It also might introduce some platform specifics inside your templates, and so it allows you to break those out. If not, and you reuse them, fantastic. Of course, yep. you can bring those down into shared. Font sizes might be different in phone and Windows, as well as control specific, right? You might create styles that change the controls, right? You might create a style that changes the way the pivot control works or looks inside phone. Well, you would of course not share that in Windows because there is no pivot control in Windows. And then specific on each platform as well, you might have those, what we showed earlier, those techniques of referencing platform-specific styles that you want to override in the opposite platform, right? So we talked about the phone accent color and how mm-hmm. you might want to override that in Windows. All right, now let's think about it from the XAML point of view. The things that you might want to save or might want to not share would be the main XAML. So see there's your main page down in view. And that's because the hub experience is going to be very unique. Doesn't mean you can't kind of work it so that you can have all of this in one place. But the reality is, and this is what we did in our own application, mm-hmm. is we put the main page in each of the individual hubs so that we could really tinker and refine and tweak until it looked exactly the way we wanted it to on the phone. We could do the same thing on Windows and not worry about implication back
and that's
and forth.
Not to say that there aren't universal controls that have that are available that you could reuse on all of them. Mm-hmm. It's just to say that in reality, they're a compromise. And you may want to consider building those unique experiences for the devices.
Yeah, that's right. And so look at the shared section now. This is maybe another option, right? And so we have the wide page and the narrow page. I've come across and I've kind of figured out of those six variants and all these other things, here are the different ways I want to lay out my application. I don't use controls that are specific for any platform. I do like the way that they automatically kind of lay themselves out again on each platform. Now I want to create the wide experience, the narrow experience, the portrait experience, and whatever else you have, and put them all in the shared project. Totally okay if you can do it, right? Mm-hmm. It's really going to be up to you how closely you want to meet with the expectation of your designer and things like that as well. One of the things that's nice is the settings. I don't know if it's nice or not, but it's really a different experience on phone than it is on Windows, because in Windows, it uses the flyout control, and there's no such thing as a flyout in phone, so you have a separate page altogether. It would really be a challenge to share those since it totally inherits from a different base.
Yep.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
I like to go back to what you said, that there just really is no silver bullet, right? All these are going to be small choices. All these are going to be things that you as a designer, you as a developer get to make, and you want to bring them together. And there are so many choices. I hate it when there are too many choices. There are so many choices that I think that's kind of why we built Solarizer. One, to prove this could be done, and two, to kind of look at this. You could do it just like this, right?
Yeah.
And so
The nice thing about this is through iteration, you're going to develop a pattern of practice that feels right for you, mm-hmm. feels right for you, your team, and so on. And the other thing to bear in mind, and Jerry kind of addressed this beforehand, is reality does impinge upon the design nirvana.
Yeah.
That sometimes design doesn't necessarily take into account because it only designs to full fidelity a certain aspect of the experience.
Yeah.
It can't cater for every possible variability in the platform and so on. And so sometimes as a developer, you might be able to turn around and say, hey, yeah, that's great. You've built this wonderful experience. However, this is built in. Why don't we look at using what's built in the platform to support that particular capability?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, your designer is just another guy, right? Or girl. And there's nothing wrong with going back to them and saying, let's not do it this way, right? Because of this. So don't receive a design and consider it in stone. It's okay to push back for the sake of not just reuse, but for the sake of the way the platform is actually put together. Perfect. I'm glad we mentioned that. All right, so let's look back and see kind of what we did. We talked about the platform capabilities, and really we were into, what about the design language? The design language is across both platforms, but then there's also kind of a specific design language for each platform. They have things like orientation bias, and they have things like hardware features that aren't on others, right? All these pieces that you get to account for. We also talked about the variability around the device, and kind of the variability around the person. We talked about accessibility. Mm-hmm. And then the fact that I can move the device, I can make it so that it is at a different orientation. Maybe I make it so it's smaller. I really struggle.
Technical term.
Yeah, I do not snap it, right?
Yeah.
And then there are also design considerations as well, which is what we kind of just went through. And it's the idea of what can I make unique? And what can I share? And how can I make the experience the same all the way across? And really, what does the platform even support when I'm doing that as well? Because I have chosen, let's say, like earlier you mentioned the Sago UI WP, or the Windows Phone font, the Sago UI Windows Phone version. You can't just standardize on that because that's not on Windows, right?
Yeah.
So now you've got either a whole technical thing to overcome by bringing it over, or you just figure out that's not going to be a unified generic.
Yeah,
exactly.
All right,
perfect. Well, that's the entirety of the design discussion, right? And don't forget, we go into a lot more detail around scaling and orientation and pieces like that in the other MVA. So don't miss out on that as well if you want a larger conversation around it. Right now, we're going to take a breakfast break.
A meal break,
yes. We're going to take a meal break. It'll be a half-hour break before we come back to the next session. And
an hour break.
It's about an hour. I saw that in my brain, saw half an hour.
Yeah, well, good job.
It's the contrast wasn't high enough.
So that was the mistake. Used your brain. Okay, we'll be back after we've had a meal, guys.
See you in an hour. About an hour.